is Sasha.
And this is Eli. And you're listening to WGXC Acra.
Hello, listeners. My name is Rachel Ann Schulman from the Camper Hudson Radio Group. Camper Hudson Radio program led by live interview, notable guests in the local swing countries are from the local organization and ask them what they do in their communities, what shaped their life of growing up where they are now. We also occasionally talk about sport news and other subjects and interests, such as the upcoming community events and culture happening in the area. Tune in on the fourth Sunday of every month at 3:30 in the afternoon on 90.7 FM. Past interviews are available at waveform.org. Thanks for listening and supporting the radio for open ears at 90.7 FM WGXC. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by MPAC, presenting the Topos Music Festival from August 28th to August 30th. Topos features performances, world premieres of commissioned projects by composers and performers, and presentations of Yannis Xenakis' 1971 work, Persepolis. Information and tickets at mpac.rpi.edu.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Christiana Abel of Housatonic, Massachusetts. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Contaminated Sound listeners, this is your host, Rob Blumberg. Just a note on this episode, it was pre-recorded August 13th, 2025, via Zoom with the lovely and creative Matt Bouchel, whom is performing September 26th at Bearsville Theater, and check that out. Please. And also, please enjoy this lovely conversation that gets heady and just a free form as one would expect from myself and the series Uncontaminated Sound. So please enjoy.
Oh, Matt Bouchel, welcome to Uncontaminated Sound, WGXC 90.7, Accra, Hudson, and Catskill. Welcome to Uncontaminated Sound.
Thank you for having me, Rob. This is fun.
Yeah, Matt, which I skipped during my quick introduction, I've read that you're a comedian, songwriter, and artist. Is that correct?
It depends who you ask, sure. Some days one or the other, but I try to balance all that. Yeah, I'd like to think of myself as a multi-hyphenate, if not a triple threat, but definitely a triple try. I'm trying to do different things.
I understand. I'm juggling this conversation series. I'm supposedly known for my photography, and I'm also now a travel writer for a magazine in Indiana. So,
oh wow!
And also I paint, and I'm known artist. So I don't know. So great. I know the juggling game. So where I guess, as in all these conversations, a logical point for me is, and I know you have a prolific background, or you built up some impressive credentials on your resume and creative resume, writing for the likes of Netflix and Fallon, et cetera, but before all that, where does your creative spark begin? Like, where are you from, and what made you, like, go to New York and pursue writing and getting into the craft?
Yeah, I am from a small town north of Pittsburgh called Cranberry Township. It is, it's like suburbs meets farmland meets chain restaurants and strip malls. You know, it's a very pleasant little place, but pretty quiet. And, I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee, and got a little more exposure to, you know, the world at large. And that's where I started kind of pursuing comedy. I was always kind of playing music as a kid. I played guitar from a young age, took lessons and kind of learned how to make music, play with different groups. And I was playing, you know, acoustic nights at like the little coffee shops in the town I grew up and stuff like that. But it wasn't until, I went to school in Nashville where I started trying stand up. I was doing some sketch comedy, heavily influenced by like late night television and Saturday Night Live. And I was a big fan of like Conan O'Brien back then and The Lonely Island and David Letterman. And I got an internship in college at The Late Show with David Letterman. That shows you how old I am, as that show still existed. Now The Late Show doesn't exist at all. I got an internship there, and I spent a semester living in New York, working there, full-time job there. And it was excellent. I loved it. I loved living in New York. That was my first time spending more than like 2-day vacation in New York City. And especially as an adult, you know, you just learn to navigate it. And I really liked the energy. I liked being around creative, smart people that I felt like hopefully maybe they would rub off on me. And after I graduated college the next semester, I had a job there as a page. And so I sort of had like definitely wasn't a red carpet. It was like a pretty ratty used carpet, but I had some kind of carpet rolled out at that point where I was like, oh, I can come here and I got a part-time job and I can try to make a go of doing comedy here and seeing if I can make anything happen. So that was kind of how I got to the city and started doing it.
Yeah. Pardon me. Now I'm dehydrated.
You're good.
So when you get to the city, you said that, what did you say? When was that? What year was that?
Around that here? Was, I moved here 2012.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. So I've been here a while.
Wow. Yeah. So when you get to the city, was your goal to really pursue your craft and like, work with like late night shows like that, or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just wanted to do as many things as I could, you know. I was 22 years old. I had a lot more energy than I do now. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just this thing of like, let me do everything. Oh, your friend's doing a sketch show and they need a piano player. I'll be the piano player. It's like, you want to start shooting a short film this weekend and you need someone to play. Like, I'll go play that role. Like, it was, there wasn't like I would love to say I came here with like laser focus, but I came here with more just manic energy of just I knew I had some talent that wasn't really developed. And I just wanted to try to be in a place where people were making things and doing stuff and putting the effort in, because I feel like the only reason I've gotten even remotely good at anything I do is because I was just like putting in reps and trying to surround myself with people that knew way more than I did about how to get stuff done. So it wasn't like I came here with like, I guess if I had one goal, it was to eventually write for late night. I think that was what I was thinking, like SNL, something like that.
Yeah.
But my roadmap was not, it was a bit foggy. It was kind of like, let's just get here and throw yourself into everything and see what sticks.
I feel like, yeah, like 22 is the perfect age for the city, where I came in, like, I moved to the city after trial and error, like, of multiple different things and, or you know, studies as well. At like 30, 31, I decided to pick up and move to Brooklyn. And that's when I actually found my voice myself, where I was like surrounded by people and the atmosphere, that encouraged my artistic voice and spirit comparatively to the other atmospheres I attempted prior, that just kind of really didn't allow me to grow as an artist or creative. And what I initially, like, it was so cool from coming from like the suburbs of like Massachusetts to New York City and Brooklyn. It was like, oh, it was so amazing. And how was your perspective in 2012 with the city and like that jump from, like you said, around Pittsburgh, correct? How was that like initial feeling of like, I could imagine it, you were ecstatic and your juices were flowing.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was probably like it was definitely like the brokest I've ever been. But when I look back on it, I didn't think of it ever as like, oh man, you're not doing well or you're not succeeding. I felt so rich in experiences and opportunities, because it felt so like any of these things you're working on with your friend, and you're working on things with your friends or your friends of your friends. And it all just felt like, yeah, like no matter what happens, something will stick and you'll get that next gig, or someone will reward you for that thing you wrote. Or it was so, yeah, it was definitely a huge adrenaline shot, because there are creative artists and entertainers all around this country, but there's such a concentration of it here. You know what I mean? And it just felt like I had never been exposed to that much of like-minded people, especially in the comedy space. Like you don't really have a huge comedy scene in Nashville, though it is kind of growing. And yeah, it was my first exposure to like a real proper city that valued a lot of like live comedy. And so I was doing like, you know, classes at UCB right off the jump. And so I was just meeting all these people that were so talented and smart. And I was kind of like, they know what they're, oh, sorry. They're like, oh man, they know what they're doing. They they have it together. And some of them did, some of them didn't. But when you're young and impressionable, you're just like, what's going on here? Teach me that. Teach me this. It was very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wanted to like, in my mind, I'm like, I need to go on stage to push myself or something, like, because I would like to kind of break down this barrier of just getting outside my comfort zone and stuff like that, or like improv or something like that. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm obviously more visual, and that's what I'm known for, the visual side of things. But and
totally,
I guess conversationally, but I'm always impressed by just persons on the stage and in the, you know, people just get up there and letting, just flowing with, you know, breaking down that barrier. And I don't know, I'm kind of losing the train.
No, but I know what you mean. There is real value in whether you want to be a stand-up comedian or a pianist or a, you know, whatever it is. There is value in the shared experience of getting on stage and being like, I'm going to do something in front of this room of people. And we're going to have this thing, whatever it was, we had this like shared experience together. It's in a world where like, it's very easy to just entertain yourself on your phone and stuff. And I'm not talking down on that. I'm super addicted to my phone, but like, it is fun. And it's fun to like get the experience of learning what a room feels like when you're up there and like they're looking at you or they're waiting to hear what you're going to say or play or whatever it might be. It's a skill set that I find very valuable. Like, I'm glad I did a lot more stage stuff when I first moved here, because it just helped me like understand how I sound and look and am perceived, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess like from that point on, from like 2012, I guess when was the point when you started getting traction on, I guess like more of your comedic stuff, or is it more music, or how did that play out? I know like I've listened to a podcast from 2022 where I believe you said like Netflix reached out from Twitter posts in 2020. But how did you get some traction? Was that the initial point where you garnered traction, or when did you get some traction, I guess?
Yeah. I started getting traction about 7 years later than I thought I would. but exactly at the right time. Like I had so much confidence in myself, and little did I know everything I did was largely garbage. And I got better though, and I got a little like, you know, quicker with my jokes, a little sharper with my writing, and I started getting traction probably, if you want to timeline it, like around 2018, 19, 20, like right around the end of the last decade. And it was largely from doing stuff online. I was sharing like funny songs and little sketches and impressions of people. And that did lead to like my first, what I consider kind of like my first paid comedy job. And I had done some small things, but this was a job where Netflix essentially paid me to make like a big end of year musical number celebrating like what they released that year. And it was the year of the pandemic. It was December 2020. So things were kind of starting to get a little better, but it was still very much pandemic time. And, it felt like such a godsend because I was kind of living on unemployment, insurance, or what do you call it? Unemployment, like benefits. And, so it was like a miracle because it was like a well-paid job, and it felt like, oh, okay, now you're going to like get to do what you want to do on a high level and be rewarded for it. So that was probably the first moment where I felt like maybe this will work beyond just like getting some notoriety on Twitter and Instagram, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I always like found it challenging. Like, I don't know, just the, well, I maybe, just my brain now is just can't digitally overloaded where I can't pay attention to Instagram anymore. Like I, or try
it's
to
really upkeep, bad.
Like same with, you know, my other stuff, even posting new stuff, I'm like, I'm so burnt out from it, you know. But
I think a lot of people probably share that, to be honest. It is feeling like, I can feel my attention span getting shorter every day. You know what I mean? I'm pretty good at focusing when I have to. I'm pretty good at leaving my phone in the other room and having like concentrated like working hours where I at least try to take a stab at writing or doing something. But like, I can feel when I'm in the app, when I've reached the breaking point of, all right, you are losing your mind. Like you're not even processing what you're scrolling through. You're just doing it to see the next Instagram story from someone you don't know. It's sort of starts to feel like junk food at a certain point. But
well now like the algorithms are like so manipulative where it's like, yeah, you're just getting advertisings constantly, ads constantly in your, well, I guess maybe I'm just a sucker, where it's just like, oh, he's going to click on this ad because I constantly just get ads for like just higher ed and just like holistic stuff. And it's like,
oh, sure.
I'll click and fill out a form and I'll just get constantly spammed by. So all my thread is just all ads comparably to anybody I follow. Or
I feel like we're at a tipping point with social media and AI integration where I think in like 4 years, this conversation, even this one right now, will feel very stupid and dated about this stuff. Cause it's like, I can feel it going to this direction where no one is 100% sure anymore if they're watching like a real thing or if this ad, who's making this ad? It looks insane. You know, it's like the stuff we're getting is slowly becoming more and more low quality. And I just don't know if people are going to want to keep going to this thing that feels like a robot factory where it's sort of like, are these things, I mean, there's always going to be good comedians and musicians and all kinds of people sharing their stuff. And theoretically, you're supposed to be looking at your friends' lives on social media. But I do think it's becoming so cluttered with the AI slop that it's just a matter of time before they either fix it, reverse course, or people start to kind of just tap out because it's diminishing returns on your happiness out of spending time on these apps right now.
I agree. I think I've had this conversation several times, and one that I do enjoy. You know, I always still like in my previous life, I was in tech, you know, and a UX designer. So, and now cool. I'm like, what did we create? You know, but
what have I done? Yeah, you're like Oppenheimer at the end of the day.
Yeah,
like, oh no. Your arms are. Well,
what it comes down to now, I think, and I feel like, is just the idea of real experiences, of modular experiences, of having community oriented stuff, of like just live performance, in physical venues, live little get togethers at, backyards and like with, musical performances, et cetera, just organic community modular, experiences that taps into the actual connection with people, you know,
and
the transference of art and expression that one can only get when you experience it live, you know? And I hope I see more of that. I've witnessed, and I've experienced myself and, just great joy in the live experience, particularly post pandemic. It was just like,
oh, totally.
Even more meaningful, I guess.
Yeah. I think people really crave it right now too. I think people want to go to events. They want to go to galleries. They want to go to shows. They want to, like, I think it gives the days more purpose than if the day slips away and you realize you didn't entertain yourself beyond looking at your phone. It's sort of like you need that shared experience.
But that being said, I've also noticed you have a fairly recent thread on Instagram. Is it more, is it a conceptual thread or is it really a bit, or is it just you speaking? Because I noticed on your thread, you're fairly active and opinionated on some things. I just curious if it's a well refined and thought out, platform, for your stuff.
I think I know what you mean. I definitely have my conflicted feelings about, like, should I be doing more things in person, which I do enjoy. I just think, you kind of play to the world you're living in. And I think all things are possible. I'm going to be doing more shows. I can talk about that later. But like, there is something about that I really value that if I have like a funny bit that I'm really excited about and I write some good jokes on it. There's something I really enjoy about knowing I can film myself doing it as if I was on stage doing stand up and I can get it out to the world 10 minutes later. And,
yeah. Yeah.
1 hour later, it can be all over the world. You know, it's very, especially over this past year, I've started looking at what I do online less like, oh, I'm just posting my videos, and more like, this is my late night TV show. You know what I mean? Like
in the
world of late night collapsing, the traditional late night, like on broadcast.
Yeah.
I feel very lucky that I can do like a few odd minutes of new material every week. Do the occasional sponsored post every month or so.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my comedy variety show mixed with like the occasional ad. And I, in the past, was doing things online to get the late night type jobs. And now I'm like, wait, you kind of are the late night. You're kind of doing your version of it.
Yeah.
And stop thinking of it as like selling out online. It's like, this is just what it is. You're getting to share your comedy with a lot of people, and occasionally you get paid for it. So what are you complaining about? you got a job in a lot of ways. So I feel very lucky to have that outlet.
I do
feel like I should be performing more, but at the same time, I only have so much energy and I like writing the stuff I put online. And, I don't know.
That's interesting though. I mean, that the concept of, your own personal broadcast and network right there, comparatively, yeah, to doing the traditional or trying the traditional route. We're so limited, you know, there's only a handful of people that could do be a late night host, and then, but now you sans algorithm and giant social media corporations controlling the actual media platform, but you can curate your own network and broadcast and
that's kind of how I'm trying to look at it. You know what I mean? And I'm not so, you know, business savvy, but that's kind of, to me, it's more of like a creative framing for my own self. And it's like, when I think of it that way, it makes me feel more like, oh yeah, this is cool. This isn't like, oh, you're just doing internet stuff. It's like, no, this is like, when you frame it that way, it helps me like get excited about like trying to write more bits to film, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is like, with the oversaturated social media and like everybody trying to be influencers, et cetera, like, how do you stand out? I mean, how do you build up that traction, I guess, that where like, I guess it's the quality, I hate to say it, content, but content.
Content's not a bad word, yeah.
I guess, yeah, that's what I'm curious about. It's like, okay, with everybody trying to say something, how does your voice stand out in the flood of everything else, you know?
I have a good answer for you, because I've really been thinking about this. Everyone thinks that AI is going to take the jobs of writers, but I think that AI is going to make writers more valuable than ever, because we're just catching up to it all. And the way you stand out is you just have to write one single sentence that is unique and original. The original thought is so rewarded online, because everyone is used to seeing the exact same trends, everyone doing the exact same bits, the exact same jokes as they flip from TikTok to TikTok to TikTok.
Yeah.
So you get rewarded for having original thoughts and original ideas now, I think, more than you did before, because I think people are so used to the junk. Yeah. So you don't have to be like Shakespeare, but if you're writing like a funny bit that's like pretty good, it might not even be 90% of the way there, but if it's pretty original and it's sort of like it captures a feeling, but it's also done in a way that's not regurgitated like trend that everyone's already seen. That's how you stand out. You just gotta like, you gotta just think for yourself and have something that's like hasn't been said before, and you're well on your way, I think. So much of what I see is just the exact same copy and pasted trends and memes, and that's fine if you're just having fun with your friends. Like, not everyone's trying to be a professional writer or a professional dancer or a professional, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think that's so key. It's just pen to paper and trying to express yourself.
So basically, taking the analog and digital, you know, just, oh yeah, having your original thoughts and keeping with the actual process and putting it out online. Yeah. The ecosystems of digital media these days, comparatively to traditional channels. Totally understand that. Yeah, it was just like, I get so burnt out sometimes from trying to keep up with like putting stuff up myself. I don't know why. I just like,
I know that feeling. I feel that way too. Yeah. I mean, like you just feel the urge to do more, and you're like, am I doing enough? And yada, yada, yada. But I think going back to that question, it's like, I think authenticity, I think it's the one thing that people can really, really sniff out is authenticity. And I think people aren't going to respond well at the end of the day to like knowing that this is not something you really believe or care about. Like, I think people can kind of like tell if you're like just desperate to be famous or just desperate to be, it just doesn't like, it doesn't work in the long run. Cause there's no that behind the that. It's sort of like, what am I looking at here? So, but the people that have success, I think in our digital world, that's way oversaturated, are the people that at the end of the day aren't putting on, you know, because audiences are smart. You got to treat audiences smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree. Or are they these days?
I mean, I think, slightly more than half the people we live with, I think, are very stupid, but I do think you don't play to those people. You know what I mean? If they like your stuff, that's great.
Yeah.
But like, When I'm trying to write jokes, I say to myself, imagine if you had to read this to your smartest friend over cocktails. Imagine if you're having a drink and you go, let me run something by you. Would you be embarrassed to say it out loud? Would you be like, this is pretty stupid? Then you got to go rewrite it. You got to find a way to punch it up. Like think you should always be thinking of the smartest people you know when you're thinking about what you're doing. And you're like, because if they like it, you know, I'm not talking like intellectual, like kind of stuffy people. I'm just talking like people that get it. People that are smart, have a good sense of humor. If they would like this, chances are there's a trickle down effect there and everyone would like this. So play to the smartest audience, hope for the best is kind of how I operate.
Now, curious, like what was the process is like? And I know I listened to it a bit on the podcast from 2022, but like the writing process regarding, say, like a Netflix production like that. And then also following that, like when you were with Fallon or writing for Fallon, like, I'm sure it was a bit different, or I obviously it's kind of more production mode, correct? Or
I guess we'll start with the Netflix thing was very unique, where it was like I was commissioned to kind of write this song, and I eventually ended up like acting in the video and being in it. But at the time, I was just paid to write the song. I thought that's all it was going to be. So it was, weirdly enough, it was not that different than what I normally do. I did it all from, they were all in L.A., I was living in New York, and I had my piano that you can see behind me, and I just sat at that piano and just worked on the song, and I just wrote it like I would write anything else. And it was largely, they were great to work with. They largely just kind of let me do my thing, and they had notes on the lyrics about wanting to include certain things, but it was pretty, that was a pretty unique job. Like, it was a one-off thing. I wrote the song, we tweaked it, and then we were off to the races. Now, the second part of the question, writing at a place like The Tonight Show, very different experience. Like, you're contributing to this, like, thing where you have to generate 1 hour of live television or live-to-tape television 5 days a week. So it was very different level of, like, workflow, a lot more people to report to, a lot more steps in the approval process. You did your best. You didn't always feel like you were firing on all cylinders, because sometimes you were just tired at the end of the week, but you were creating something new every day, whereas like the Netflix thing was like 3.5 minutes of comedy so you could put all your energy into that thing and making it killer. But at a place like The Tonight Show, you're kind of, which is why they employ multiple writers, because you need a lot of people to kind of be generating that much material every day.
I could imagine it goes for any other late night, it's just the churn and totally. Burn. And how long did you how long were you on board with the Tonight Show there?
I was there from 2021 to like around like summer 2022.
Cool.
So not terribly long, but it was a good stint. It was a good experience.
I could imagine. Did that lead to like any other opportunities, or did you just, after that, did you kind of like start doing your own thing, or?
Yeah, I mean,
after that, like, what did you do? I guess, yeah. Sorry.
It weirdly indirectly led to a lot of opportunities. Like, no one's ever in a meeting said like, "Oh, thank God you wrote at the Tonight Show. You've got the job." Nothing against the Tonight Show; it's fine. But like, it's not like this thing where, and I think a lot of young writers and comedians think like, once you're in, you're in. It doesn't really matter. It's much more about building good relationships with people and getting the experience and the education has stayed with me forever of like how to just work and be professional with a lot of different departments and move quickly. But I left the show and started focusing on my own stuff again, because I didn't really put out much of my own material while I was there, just because it was a busy job. And I started doing those kind of walking comedic monologues that I sort of do now, and that got me a lot of attention and a lot more opportunities, because I just started building like an audience through those. And I was still making music and doing other things, but I kind of started focusing more on that instead of doing like elaborate sketches and stuff. I started developing a show. I can't talk too much about it right now, but like I've started developing some TV and film projects like within the year after leaving. And a lot of it came from people that were aware of what I was doing online. It was a nice thing. It was nice to be rewarded for like your comedic voice, you know?
Yeah. No, I, I can imagine so. Sorry, I'm hitting a wall. Like I find myself in this like locked room, like for quietness. But it's, yeah, it's
where are you?
Like in a prison here.
Yeah, it kind of does look like it could be.
I mean, it's super stuffy, so I'm like getting a bit dehydrated.
Okay. Do you feel like I'm giving you anything good?
Yeah, yeah. This is where I like to go. It's just off the cuff conversations.
Totally.
You know, and I checked out like some of your online stuff quickly. Like I'm just like, yeah,
sure.
So I guess like now and this is my favorite subject these days is just talking about the importance of comedy now in this era of one would say an era
fascism?
That yeah you said it I didn't yes so like I guess where was I going with that just I'm finding more comedy is ever more important now to stand up and against such forces and speak out. And I feel like you're kind of touching upon that in your videos online or Insta stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Or a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I'm disgusted by the way the country is like falling apart. I truly am. Like, I think it's such a disaster and this will affect us for years to come. I always make this joke of like, it's not about me. But these are the prime years of my life, and the amount of times I have to watch dumb people ruin the place I love living in is exhausting. I just cannot believe that this is happening to us. So I'm deeply frustrated, and I don't consider myself a political comedian or like a, I don't know, like I don't, I read a lot of news. I read a lot of, you know, books and things about the moment we're living in, but I guess to me, I don't necessarily know if comedy is important, but the stuff that I care about is what's going on in the world around me. And to me, it is almost, it's almost impossible to do what I'm doing online and like not kind of be talking about. I mean, I've always talked about what's going on in the world around me in my comedy. Yeah. It's just now there is such a thing that it is almost impossible not to talk about because it's such a crazy time we're living in, truly, like really dark. And it's hard to walk the line of doing something because I always want to be funny over important.
Mm.
And I always get bummed out when a lot of comments are like, what you're doing is really, it really matters. And I'm like, oh Jesus. Cause then I'm like, I don't want to be like a crusader. I want you to laugh first and foremost, you know?
Yeah.
You guys know where I stand, you know? Like, it's not like I'm trying to be like, let me educate you on that. I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
It's just, how do you not talk about, like, to me, it feels frivolous, unless I was writing like a scripted TV show or a film. It feels frivolous to be me directly to camera talking to you and being like, don't you hate it when you can't get the cover on your duvet? Like, it just feels so crazy when there's like ICE raids happening 20 blocks from me. You know, it's like,
true.
It just, and again, you can do those jokes. It's fine. It's just, I have a hard time being like, I don't know. It's all consuming right now, I think. And I'm very frustrated. So I kind of am leaning more in the direction of doing like criticism of what's going on in the news every week.
Yeah.
I try to find stuff that's a little less, related to like Trump and the administration, but
every day it's something different. I know, it's something crazy.
And it's something so shocking that you're like,
yeah.
And so what I try to do is not just be like, we don't like this, right? Boo! Like, I try not to do that as much as I try to find a funny bit off of these stories that everyone's talking about. And if I can find something that feels, you know, comedy first and less like, you know, corny, cringy, then that feels like a victory. But it's hard. It's crazy the time we're living in. I don't know how best to talk about it all the time, so it's tricky.
Well, on that note, I mean, how do you stay positive, I guess, offline and just within yourself and I guess mental health? Like, how do you just stay? I know everybody's just like so overloaded by all this. I don't know if a lot of people openly talk about it, but I'm just like curious, how do you yourself stay positive and like mentally fit and light despite of what we see every single day, something mm-hmm. more extreme against our republic and democracy?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's a great question, Rob.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't know. Like, I don't like really subscribe to this idea of like doom scrolling or anything. Like, I think it's important to read as much as you can tolerate and as much as you can sort of be aware of what's going on. But I do think like, if you think I'm still in like the shock of it all phase, like, I don't know if I am staying positive necessarily. I think I'm like a bit angry, I think that's a fine emotion to have, but like, I think it's like, I'm driving by the car wreck on the highway, and I think I'm still just looking at it like, how did that happen? You know, and I'm not thinking necessarily about like how I'm gonna like drive. Like, I'm sort of just like in it still. I can't offer any real good advice on how to like feel good about the future, because I think we're in like a real pivotal moment in this country's history where like we're really making some decisions that are gonna set us back a while. And there's a part of me that's like, oh, Democrats will fall into power at some point, and something will be done, or we reverse some of these things that have happened with the Supreme Court, but I don't know, man. I'm just trying to like take it day by day and celebrate like the little victories where it feels like, but I do think this country is like definitely heading down like an irreversible path for at least the next decade. And,
oh, definitely.
And you just got to kind of help where you can. And like, that's why I like to do the things I do, because again, I don't think it's important per se, but when you look like me, like a white dude online, you kind of like, and you have a little bit of an audience, it's like, it doesn't hurt to just be like, hey, by the way, this is severely effed up. And like, it's a good thing to like, I talk about Trey and Matt all the time. I know I'm kind of rambling here, but I talk about the guys who created South Park, and they just got like $1 billion from their deal to keep making the show under Paramount, and they could do anything they want. They don't even have to make the show anymore. They are wealthy 100 times over. And they're like so adamant that what they're seeing in the world is wrong, and they're using their platform to keep doing that. And it's very inspiring, because you're like, these guys don't have to do anything. Like, they've proven themselves. They're kind of, they've had their runs of being irreverent and whatnot. And they're still saying like, no, guys, this is insane. And I think the more people that make these really evil people feel like losers and make you feel like a loser for tying your horse to that cart, I think that's how you like kind of turn the culture to be a little more like, oh yeah, what was that time we went through? Like, let's fix that. Let's have a little compassion again. Let's have a little more empathy again, you know?
Yeah, no, it's and that's the thing too. It's like this anger, you know, like where is it stemming from? Like, it's, you know, nobody, you know, if you're one side or another, nobody gets like, you know, everything's so polarized these days.
Yeah.
It's like before, you know, what diplomacy used to be, or, you know, you sit down at the table with differing ideas, but you came to a happy medium or agreement.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no such thing as agreements these days, you know? And,
no, you're 100% right. It's definitely, there's no middle ground, because the battle lines have been so distinctly drawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the extremism has gotten so crazy that it's like, you can't even really have a conversation with someone who is looking you dead in the eye and saying the sky isn't blue. Yeah. So where do you meet? What table do you meet at where you have to be like, okay, sure. Yeah. You think the vaccine's killing people, and now we got to have a serious conversation about like, who's going to run the CDC? It's like, what are you talking about? Like, it's beyond like, we can have a healthy debate. There is no healthy debate when one side believes in a fantasy. You know, it's just crazy town. It's crazy town out here.
It's scary when people think Idiocracy, the movie, is a documentary. Of course, I mean, Mike Judge's excellent film. Idiocracy, where it's like, oh, it just parallels. It's kind of like The Simpsons paralleling reality, like The Simpsons predicted it, you know? And
Totally.
It's like, yeah, I, the, just a lack of intellectualism. I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't even know if I could chalk it up to that. I don't like. I'm not really in the business of like trying to explain or I just sort of like, I just can't believe it. I'm in disbelief how bad it's got. I I'm not one of those people who's like, we're the best country in the world. Everything's perfect. I know we have a lot of problems, but I would have never guessed that we would allow ourselves to get into a position this dark. And that's where it's like, that's where it's tricky. How do we talk about this moment?
You know, you just see like National Guard to DC, the federal takeover of DC. I don't want to like get too deep into it because, I'm just here generally to talk about artistic craft, but I mean,
but it's all related, man.
It's all together now. It's all glued. You cannot speak about it, and particularly culture. You know,
one thing that really annoys me about this that kind of stuff is when I get this comment a lot, and I know it's people that mean well. You know, same team. I don't want to do friendly fire, but it's like people will be like, "You don't get it." This Washington thing, it's just a distraction. It's just a distraction. I'm like, what's the distraction when everything's bad? How is that distraction worse than he's distracted from this thing that's a distraction? Like, I'm like, I can chew bubble gum and walk. Like, I can follow the distraction. I just hate this throwaway line of like, he's doing this to distract you. I'm like, sure, but it's all bad. So I don't really necessarily believe in the distraction theory. I'm like, sometimes people are just bad. Like, stop saying it's like a decoy. It's weird. We're adults. We can pay attention. We can follow all the things.
There's no game. It's just bad.
It's all bad.
He's just blatantly doing what he wants. And there's no checks and balances these days.
He's doing this so you don't pay attention. I'm like, I'm paying attention. I got it all. I'm seeing it all.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I'm missing something because I'm paying attention to this story. Yeah.
No, a thread I wanted to kind of investigate more myself is his connection with the WWF and wrestling. On a serious note, look, in the 80s, he was very involved in the 90s too with WWE. WWE and Vince McMahon. I think he's built up a persona based off of that. I know a handful of friends, but that are avid wrestling fans now, even at 40, and they're very his support. They buy into this idea he sells of this persona, which I believe he's created. And you look at also who the Secretary of Education is Linda McMahon, which is Vince McMahon's wife. Yeah. And who's going to head this like National Fitness Day was Triple H of the WWE.
Yeah,
there's
a
deep connection there that somebody needs to explore and research. And I may do it because I seriously want to tie into the connection of building up this heel persona to persuade the masses.
I think that could be a very fascinating asset.
Yes.
I mean, it is, I wasn't 100% following you at first about the connection. Now I get what you're saying. Yeah, it is like, and he's been on wrestling shows a lot too, right? Like he's definitely,
there's a reason for it too.
Yeah.
So if he correlate maybe his voting base to wrestling fans, it may equal. So I don't know.
There's something to be said about
a research subject that one could dive into.
He's a reality TV star at the end of the day. And that's sort of, he knows better than anyone in politics how to be entertaining on junk TV. And that goes
into the cult of, celebrity though. I mean, why is it so powerful? Why is this idea of celebrity so powerful? Like, also, just a note, Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, was a comedian prior to becoming... So what is it? You know, and Reagan was an actor as well. I'm just like, this idea of celebrity and success and like the ability to sway a crowd, we can wrap back to comedy.
I think at the end of the day, all these things you're describing, I mean, someone might vomit if I say this about Donald Trump, but like, it's just charisma. Some people have this thing where you can't look away, whether it's a funny comedian or a outlandish Republican or you know, it's just if someone has that thing where you just want to see what they're going to say next, or for better or worse, that captivates people. And everyone can say they hate celebrities and this is so stupid, you know? But it's like, you know these people and you're watching them, and it's sort of like, it's a snake eating its own tail kind of problem of like everyone being mad about celebrity culture, but us paying attention to these things, you know, you don't have to like,
That's true. I mean, it's just fascinating where like, why are we like as a culture so obsessed with this like need or just celebrity, the idea of celebrity. And also now Labubu.
Yeah, sure.
Like we get obsessed by these things, and as a culture, not individuals. And I'm not speaking; I'm just generalized, theory now of just like we get obsessed with like the idea of idols, and I'm just curious why, you know, on the mass level, you know, that's all.
It's such a larger question than my pay grade. It's like it's a deeper human nature.
Well, this is where I like to go.
Yeah, that's where we have to go talk to a sociologist or something. I don't know. I think people find their champions in society, whether they're stuffed animals or reality TV stars. And it's like, you find the things that give you excitement and the people you want to cheer for. And that's, and that's fine until it becomes religious fervor.
That's true. Yeah. On that light note, where do you where do you imagine your stuff growing to, evolving to? I know it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Like to kind of project in the future, like, oh, I'm going to be here, whatever. Nobody knows where they're going to be, you know.
No, I
these,
mean, truly.
These days, but I guess, coming back from the higher level questions and my theoretical talk, which I love to do, get Hattie, wrapping back to you as a crafts person or just a creative, in a comedian and writer, songwriter, where do you see your stuff evolving from? I know you have the building up the series on Instagram, but where do you see that kind of evolving to into other aspects of your practice?
You know, I want to, I really don't know. I was talking about this with a friend of mine last week, saying I got into doing like the comedy stuff with the hope of that someone would see what I do and like it and give me a job in show business. And I've had a job in show business. I've had a couple smaller ones too. And I sort of think now it's not really about trying to get a job from someone else. It's gotta just be, and I think everyone should think more this way if they want to work in entertainment. It's you just got to make, I want to make as many things as I can, whether it's on my account or it's if I create a play or a TV show or something. I just want to be my own boss forever now, because I do think the industry is contracting, and I don't know what's going to happen with my career, but if I have all these irons in the fire, surely one of them will come to fruition. That might be wishful thinking. I want to be in all the fields, you know. I want to just keep trying to challenge myself and keep making the stuff that people enjoy from me. So
yeah, no, it's I totally agree. Where these days there's no linear path like on any career, you know. There's no like I'm gonna work in a career for 30 plus years, whatever.
Yeah, no, that very you much have doesn't, to kinda, doesn't exist in the same way.
You have to hustle on all accords now, particularly in the entertainment side of things, but even in like business and tech and whatever, you know, you get to do all these other things and create your own brand and all that too.
Yeah
It's
a lot. It's always going to be that way, I think. But if you want to, like, I don't know, I obviously it's field dependent, but I'm speaking specifically as someone who works in comedy. It's sort of like if you want to do it, you got to kind of try as many things as you can to figure out what sticks, whether that's a podcast or stand up every week or making short films, whatever you want to do. It's like, you kind of just got to just be gunning for it, because it's not like someone's going to come to you and be like, hey, I heard you're really funny, you should come work on this thing. There are only like 60 late night writing jobs anymore. Like, they just don't exist. Like, so you got to just pretend that you got to make the next great thing. And that's daunting and it's awful, but like, someone has to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the arts must continue. It comes back to like this thought and my theory of just just little module or like little tribes out there of creative groups that create these output these really interesting projects just based off this little group of individuals, you know. So it's more mm-hmm. just like a bit like we're hearkening back. I'm old. Actually,
I like
this hark. I just like
I like
language. Just going back to our like ancient or archaic ways of just being in tribes. That's kind of where we're at now. Because of the funneling of social media, I guess. But I think if you understand that, if one understands that, you can use that to your advantage regarding creative output and creating unique projects based off of that concept and model. If I'm getting too conceptual, please let me know.
That makes perfect sense to me, though. Like, I trust me, as someone who literally, for the most part, makes their living on social media, it's I see the double-edged sword of it all. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely don't like think it's the best place to spend your free time, like scrolling and whatnot. But I also know it's a massive, massive tool of exposure. If you know, it allows anyone from any background and any level of wealth, for the most part. You know, I can't cover everyone, but like, it allows anyone to kind of be in the game if they want to be. You can share your poetry on Substack for free tomorrow. You can share your photography on Instagram for free tomorrow. You can share your like silly songs on Spotify. It's easier than ever to get your songs on the same platforms that Bad Bunny uses. And then, you know, like, so it's great in the sense that it does flatten the level of entry and any great idea can be rewarded overnight. But I also get that it can be harmful as far as information being funneled to certain people and not others and yada yada. So
this is true. No, yeah, it's again, like you said, double-edged sword of the playing field. Everybody has these tools to get their stuff out there, but then again, it can be manipulated anyway, in the bad ways as well. But
totally.
Do you imagine doing like a film at all, or like doing some film stuff, or like
I wrote a film last year. I wrote a film last year that is kind of slowly developing. Can't talk too much about it anyway, but it's not. It's like, but hopefully that gets made in the next year, maybe. Like that would be a great thing. I would love to be writing films and getting films made, but the indie film world has its own challenges too, as well as anything. But yeah, I would love to make films. I'm writing something right now I'm really excited about. I'm about halfway through that. That's kind of how I'm filling my days is if I'm not doing comedy videos, I'm like working on that screenplay. But but that's a world I don't know much about. And I would love to like break into that world too in the next few years and see if I can get some things up and running. And I'd love to direct. I'd love to do all that stuff. So yeah, it's just putting the pen to paper every day right now and trying to create, you know, I call it like giving ammo to my people, you know, like I try to like load it up so they have stuff they can take out to studios and see if anyone wants to, you know, hop in bed with me, to use a crass phrase, but but we'll see.
Totally just constantly writing. Do you still, how about musically, that, you know, I know your energy seems like on the comedic and writing side. So are you still doing any musical stuff?
I have a new song coming out, God willing, at the end of the summer. But I'm trying to get someone to mix and master right now. I'm working with some different people. It's largely just me and the piano, which I don't really do. A lot of the stuff I've released is kind of full band or more electronic. I'm trying something where I've had this burst of motivation where I've been writing a lot of songs on the piano, and they're very simple. I mean, I think